All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we here are looking at Esau and Jacob going their separate ways, essentially, in these verses. Esau takes the initiative. He tells Jacob to pack up his stuff, break camp, go with him back to his home. That obviously, the intention is for him to go and reside with him. And that obviously is in violation of God's geographical will for Jacob. And that is, he was to go leave from Haran and go to Canaan. And his request, if you will, for Jacob to follow him to his place kind of catches Jacob a little bit off guard. And he then gives him reasons why he shouldn't break camp immediately, especially, and to follow him and his 400-man army back to Seir. And that is because of the condition, physical condition, of both the younger children, who would be quite wore out from their 300-mile trek and the nocturnal activities of the evening or the night before, as well as the fact that obviously his herds of animals is birthing season for them, a lot of newborn young ones, and to be placed under conditions of having to move along with marching soldiers, etc., would be damaging in regards to their health and his livelihood otherwise in that respect. And he turns around and he then insists to Jacob, to Esau, Jacob does, to go ahead and move on himself. And in that way, he says, I can move at my own pace, at my own leisure. And part of the force that we see in his polite imperative in regards to passing on before Jacob is in the adjective use of the verb to pass on, abad, in the Hebrew, which is insisting rather than simply exhortative or zealous request otherwise, encouraging request otherwise in that regards. And he uses, obviously, the leverage of argument of trying to keep up with Jacob, etc., and his 400-man army as not being a wise thing for him to do or anything he cares to do at this point in time. And pick up point 29 of our notes here, page 15. Letting Esau's men go ahead, Jacob tells him they will allow Jacob to, quote, proceed at my leisure according to the pace of the cattle or the herds that are before me, and according to the pace of the children. Ahal, Lamed, Af, Lamed, Regel, Melaka, Asher, Lamed, Paneh, Wal, Lamed, Regel, Ha, Yeled. 30, the English phrase, proceed at my leisure, in the Hebrew means to carefully lead according to gentleness. Nahal, Lamed, Af. So 31, with the arranged pre-departure of Esau and company, he would then leave Jacob to take care of both business, that is, the word that is translated cattle is literally melaka, meaning business or work, and family needs then, the children, as one would expect from a mature person with their priorities intact. Many people would just basically capitulate immediately, okay, yeah, yeah. I'll go with you. We'll pack up and we'll go. But we see that Jacob obviously is thinking straight now. We saw his knee-jerk reactions before in regards to certain in regards to the circumstance of meeting Esau, dividing his company in two, taking his family off in the middle of the night, and all this other human viewpoint energy of the flesh that he had gave in. Now he got his head on straight. He's got priorities. His priorities is those under his authority. See. Those who are his responsibility. And his reasoning, his excuses that he gives to Esau here, to me, are quite legitimate. They are prudent, in fact, in regards to the situation as it is. So, to be thinking in this fashion makes sense, it's logical, it's prudent, what one would expect for someone who has their spiritual priorities intact. Take care of family first. You take care of your family, your responsibilities. I need to take care of mine. See? So 32, that the marching orders are at the, quote, pace, literally means foot in the Hebrew, regel, of the animals, looks to the stride of nursing parents natural to taking care of their newborn. Not that he couldn't move on with having newborns, but to go slowly, let the mothers build a nurse, keep their own infants herded, if you will, and protected around them. And that obviously would be a much slower pace than what one would expect in just moving on, trying to make time, as it might be with Esau and company. So, 33, that pace then with the animals itself will provide the slowed down momentum to give the children some leisure time. So, it would just all work together. Let us go at the animals' pace. That way, that gives us time to kind of let the children rest, etc., etc. So, 34, then comes the awkward part of Jacob's excerpt. It's polite, but as I stated, somewhat awkward. Awkward in trying to figure out what he's doing here. Then comes the awkward part of Jacob's excerpt, quote, until I come to my Lord at Seir. Seir being the capital of Edom, the headquarters, if you will, capital city of Esau. That's Ad Asher Bo El Adon Seir. So 35, by all appearance, it was Jacob's initial intention to eventually make his way to Seir. 36, however, we know that he never does. There's no record of him ever going to Seir after the fact. In fact, he will have two stops, basically, within the next near future, Succoth, and then into Canaan proper itself, which he settles down until God tells him to go on back down to Bethel. So what are we to make of that? Point 37. 38, some commentaries, as I've already kind of brought out, use his intentions here as leverage, that the whole declining of offer was only a flimsy excuse because Jacob still does not trust Esau and remains fearful of potential danger. In other words, once again, he's deceiving Esau. That's how some pick this up. He's intentionally lying to him. Well, one can have intentions and express their intentions, and they can always change their mind. See, does that mean their original intentions are wrong or sinful? Well, by all appearance, Esau doesn't have any problem with any of this. In fact, no skin off his back. He packs up and takes off after one additional offer, as we will see. So, I'm not going that direction that a lot of commentaries do in exegesis otherwise, that all this is just a fabrication of Jacob. He's still running under fear, etc. I don't see that. I see him with his thinking cap on, and he's taking care of business, first and foremost. And he's also got doctrine in his mind, and it's important to understand that this initial offer in regard to Esau catches him off guard. So he's trying to field it without, you know, destroying this new peaceful relationship that they have now established. So 39, there their reasoning is his mention of later coming is nothing but a ruse to get Esau to go ahead and leave. That's how some take this. 40, yet the legitimate concerns of family and business, plus the insistent language of verse 14 that Jesse forced, no, you go ahead and move on. And the fact that Esau has no qualms with Jacob's reasoning refutes that idea. To me, that indicates there's other intentions in regards to Jacob. This is not some scheme, some fabricated scheme, running under fear again. And these things, to me, mitigate it. He's taken charge of over his STA, he's taken charge of the situation. And it's pretty clear the fact that Esau moves on without giving any grief that he is the authority between the two. That the older will serve the younger. he will be subservient to him. But still, it's kind of awkward addressing it and seeing where he's coming from. So 41, the key to Jacob's intent here, what's his intentions, is in the preposition until, which is simply odd in the Hebrew, that relates to the time lapse between the conversation and potential arrival. 42, in other words, Jacob is simply expressing his desire for more time to determine his course of action, though initially he's not totally adverse to the idea on the surface. Okay, it's kind of like, I'll think about it, type of address to Esau. Coming there, I immediately, I don't really have a problem with that, of you inviting me. But I need time. And that's brought out by this preposition, ad, until. 43, that Jacob is buying time here, is clear otherwise in the discourse of moving at his own pace. So he's kind of put on the spot. He's being asked to immediately pack up, break camp, and move off with his brother to Seir. Jacob's not falling for this ruse or this offer given to him by his brother. Not on those conditions. Not on his brother's conditions. See. 44, as will become clear in later texts, buying more time is a correct doctrinal move for Jacob to clearly reconsider the offer at hand in contrast to God's directive will. If you read ahead, you know that he doesn't take off and go anywhere after the fact, really. He moves a couple miles down the road and he sets up camp for the coming winter months. And then he'll move on into Canaan. So, you know, by the fact that he went on to Canaan, that he nixed the whole idea completely and totally after the fact. And what's to say that he didn't send servants to Syria? It's just not recorded, you know, saying Jacob's declined to offer to come in. You know, you don't know that. So, yeah, I always kind of get up in a little fellowship huff whenever I see commentaries just judging the crap out of biblical characters without documentation. I don't go for it. In a bad way, especially. 45, he, Jacob, has been put on the spot, is now trying to gracefully excuse himself. In verse 15, Esau has absolutely no problem with Jacob's appeal and rather simply suggests a contingent, a security escort. Please let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. This is part of the contingent of his 400-man army. Yasod na im min ha'am asher et. Verse 47, we might ask if the suggestion by Esau now means he doesn't trust Jacob and wants security that he will actually show up. If you're going to judge one, why not judge the other person? This is a tongue-in-cheek for commentaries that want to judge Jacob otherwise. So, as I note in parentheses, in contrast to suggesting Jacob's mistrust, there's no grounds for that. That's 48. Again, there is no clear reason for Esau's distrust in this matter. And actually, the idea goes against the grain of natural innocence expressed on Esau's part in the reunion. Esau, when he came to meet Jacob, was absolutely free of any past animosity or distrust in Jacob. In fact, he's there on Jacob's behalf. He embraces him with open arms. They cry because they hadn't seen each other for so long. He finally figures out that he really didn't send these things for help, his requests and stuff for help, that Jacob has some guilt that he's carrying with him and may believe that he still wants to murder him or something of that nature. You know, all that points to me to someone that basically is going into this with a clear conscience. He's not scheming to undermine Jacob in any way. So, it just doesn't make sense to me to go that direction. So, we can give you a better, I think, a logical explanation for all this. 49, a more rational explanation to his offer for Esau here, to send part of the contingent of army, is the idea that Esau originally misunderstood the intent of Jacob's message as one asking for help. Again, bringing in these little subtle points that I've brought out, how they continue to work their way in, and you find a reason now, even additional reason for why things happen the way that we explain them to happen, his misunderstanding that he is asking for help, and hence why he showed up with 400 men. 50, he brought 400 men for that reason, that's to escort Jacob. So now why waste the effort completely, and Jacob can use some of the people to assist in his ongoing travels? Well, I'm here. I've got part of my army with me. So I'll let me leave some of them with you, and I'll give you protection. So I'll go ahead and protect you, see. So, there you have it. It's my story, and I'm sticking with it till the end of the notes. 51, once again, Jacob declines politely. What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. Lama, Zeb, Masa, Ken, Bet, Ayan, Adon. 52, now his question here is both pragmatic and reflective of Jacob's spiritual demeanor. Where his doctrinal thinking cap being on now, as we say, being in fellowship. 53, in Jacob's mind, Esau was the only real SGA danger they had concern over, and now that has been resolved. On a more spiritual note in regards to Jacob fighting his SGA in fear over this whole thing. Well, that's been resolved. My brother doesn't want to kill me. He doesn't want any of my property. So, you know, he's looking at from the terms of the suggestion to give you security, to protect you. Well, I don't need any more protection in regards to my STA thinking because you're the only thing that I was really scared of. See. And then that's the reflective part of it. Then on the more pragmatic sense of it, 54 further, knew that Esau was available on Jacob's behalf with a small arm hit beck and call would deter any other would-be marauders. The news, obviously, would get out. Esau and a 400-man army went out and met his brother. you screw with them, you screw with the Army.
So I would be implied, kind of.
Now this is the fourth time in the reunion event that Jacob has expressed a desire to, quote, find favor in the sight of Esau. This is the fourth time we've seen this phraseology used in regards to Jacob. The first one was via his original message, confused in intent by Esau, back in 32:6. Telling him that he had property, and by all indications, a lot of property. And then finishing, should be actually verse 5, that I may find favor in your sight. Verse 6 is fine. The messenger returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau. Furthermore, he's coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him, explaining his interpretation of what the message meant to him. Jacob's asking for help from potential disaster, for being robbed. So, the verse is all right. 5 gives you the phrase. So that's the first time. The second time was via the clear interpretation of his message to find grace in Esau. In our chapter 33, in verse 8, in the continued discourse after Jacob and Esau are reunited, and his family comes down and does all their genuflecting before Esau, things are starting to dawn on Esau. Things are not quite as they may seem to be in his own thinking in regards to Jacob, that maybe there is more to it than him wanting him there to help him. That maybe there is some fear or intimidation or something he's dealing with. And that's when he asked him in verse 8, what do you mean by all this company which I met? That looks at those that parade of animals that he set up in their tiers to as a preemptive, if you will, introduction of Jacob to Esau of gifts. And he told the servants to tell him that they were presents for him. And now he's asking, well, what's all those? Well, the servants told him what they were, what they were for. But now it's dawning on him. I think Jacob doesn't trust me. I think maybe he thinks that I really meant that I was going to kill him 20 years ago. You know, so he asked him point blank, and then face to face. Obviously, now Jacob's response to him via the very same words used in regards to his message to find favor in the sight of my Lord. He recognizes, oh, the intent was that you might forgive me. It's an act of contrition. I'm sorry. See. And obviously, Esau, that's so far past him. He's forgotten all this stuff. I mean, basically. He's put it behind him. And that's when he tells him, oh, keep your stuff, man. I got plenty. And then finally, Jacob goes, oh, man, he's not even going to rob me. God really is going to deliver me. Jiminy Christmas. On Easter. So, that part of the test to me was fairly exceptional in regards to really illustrating the power of the SCA. The test should have ended right when Esau came up and hugged Jacob for him. He should have known right then and there, Jacob isn't the same. I mean, Esau is not the same as he was. But his SCA was still nagging at him. Still just poking at him, man. And he still didn't trust him. And he didn't know how he was going to take, how he took the presentation of the animals, etc. And maybe he's just being nice because he thinks he's going to take over everything. See? And confiscate all my property. So the test was technically over. But his SEA kept it going on in his mind. And how does that fit so perfectly? Because the whole thing was imagined anyway. Esau was not going to hurt him. It was all conjured up in regards to his own SEA imagining that he's going to kill him. And that's the way it is a lot of times in our lives, our tests. We bring our tests on ourselves because we let our SEAs get the best of us and create scenarios and hypothetical situations that factually have yet to exist, and you don't know. And when you don't know something, really there's only one alternative. Faith rested. What else are you going to do? Sit there and wring your hands over it? Get wrapped around the axle? You know. So it's just, this has really been fun for to go through, at least on my part, to see a mature, positive believer and the reality of the SCA working in a positive, mature believer's life still at that level of spiritual growth and what the SCA will do. Of course, we don't push aside the fact that he walked out of there with a permanent limp for the rest of his life under divine discipline. And his youngest son, Joseph, was a silent rebuke to him in this whole ordeal as he ran out in front of his mother to go meet Esau when everybody else was cowering to him. Jacob, Joseph's going to have some real tests in life, not some of this imagined STA stuff. See, this is just good. So the second time was when he makes clear the interpretation of his message given to him. See, he then uses the phraseology again to acknowledge God's grace via finding favor in Esau. In verse 10, that's when, if you will, the SCA shackles are off of him completely. He now relates the whole situation to God's grace in delivering him. And Jacob said, in regards to response to Esau telling him to keep his stuff, "No, please, if now I've found favor in your sight, to take my present from my hand. For I see your face as one sees the face of God, and you have received me favorably." And that was comparing the grace in his reunion with Esau being similar to the very grace that Yahweh had given and extended to him just that night before and not killing him. And he just crippled him, see. "Please take my gift which has been brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me because I have all." Literally. So it's not exact same phraseology, but it is the same sense. It takes it and puts it in its doctrinal perspective. And so that acknowledges God's grace via finding favor in Esau, D, now an expectation of finding further favor in Esau, complying with Jacob's desire will to counter the encounter to Esau's proposal of moving on with him. "No, you go on ahead. I'm going to go at my own pace." So 56, the sequence of quotes here reflects quite remarkably the ideas of confusion, the confused reading of intent of the original message, orientation to the truth, Jacob face to face telling him what he meant by finding favor with him, insight to God's plan, recognizing God's grace in delivering him from Esau, and last but not least, expectation of further fulfillment. How pretty is that picture? "57, all these principles are as they are centered on grace." Grace is the theme, see. So 58, the clauses highlight the sub-themes of the Esau caper, revolving around the confusion of SCA interference and the proper prescription to spiritually stay the course, to get oriented with the clear interpretation of Scripture, appealing and looking to God's grace and deliverance regards to your situation and test, and faith resting God's promises in the future in regards to fulfillment of His Word. 59, now whether Jacob's final expectation of finding further favor with Esau is tempered with doubt or confidence is again left to the reader's own conclusion by our author. However it may be, at this point in time, I don't think Jacob really cares. But we're left to that conclusion. Does he expect Esau to submit and show him favor once again in this regard? So 60, again, this is by design to marquee the fact that Jacob's choice to first separate from Esau to further reconsider his offer is the right choice, even if one finds some fault in his approach. Part of the impact of the test for Jacob was at the end of the test. Jacob, in that regard, you're left to wonder whether he's in fellowship or out of fellowship right at the very end. We went through that. And that was left to our own conclusions too. And it points to the fact that really it's moot at that point in time because the test is essentially over. And the real issue is how much time did he redeem during that test? Did he pass the test overall? So the silence here is the fact that really whether he expects Esau to agree to his deal or not is moot. The real issue is he's making the right moves. He's staying on the right path. See, that's what you find with positive volition. Even as they have issues with their STA, they consistently stay on the right path. They stay with the straight and narrow in spite of all the lumps and bumps and bruises that our STA brings us and gives to us along the way. We hang in there to the end, see. That's the goal. And we may get under STAs on occasion. But it's not going to mitigate and cause one to, if you will, capitulate, totally crash and burn in regards to their NPR and God's will for their life otherwise. They continue to move on. Continue to stay in Bible class, face to face. You continue to rebound. You continue to pray. You continue to apply Bible doctrine in your life, even though you may stub your toe on occasion. See? And yeah, sometimes it hurts. So, the situation here, Jacob putting an immediate halt in regards to Esau, wanting him to come home with him, was definitely the right move in consideration of the fact that this was not God's geographical will for him. So, when you see doctrine in question, rather than saying to some other alternative in regards to it, truly the best move is to stop and think about it. Now, that may be sometimes that you don't have time to stop. But when you do, it's prudent to do so and consider these things and make sure everything's in perspective and not let your emotions and the moment to carry you in regards to your decisions. 61, Jacob's method here points to an event in which he did not see any need to rock the boat as to the newly acquired peaceful coexistence with his brother. 62, there is no need to bring up the issue of separation if a less abrasive excuse can be offered. He's recognizing that just like with his uncle Laban, he needs to separate from Esau. He took care of the reunion, but it is not God's will for him to hang out with this guy and it become part of his family scenario and cosmic endeavors in life. See. And as it is in a doctrinal separation, obviously you got to be discerning when you deal with people. And it doesn't mean you have to tell people, well, I'm separating from you. No, if you've got legitimate reasons bring you to the correct application. Otherwise, there's no harm in that. You know, separation isn't about to estrange people. It's to put them on notice. People will get the hint over time, sometimes. You know, after a while, you may have to tell them if they don't get the hint. But obviously, we're not out to... It's not your goal to go out and ruffle feathers. If it can be avoided. You want to maintain peace. Where's it be at peace with all men, as far as possible. So here, I just see Jacob using showing us an excellent example of applying separation in that fashion. 63, Esau is negative and has no real desire in God's plan anyways. And for Jacob, the primary issue is having found peace between them. I mean, separation, in part at least, is designed to put people on notice that they need to get their spiritual act together. Jacob knows Esau has no interest in his spiritual life. So why make an issue of everything? If people have no issue in doctrine, you don't sit there, well, I'm separating from you now. No, it's all fine. It's your business. It's your choice. I respect that as much as God does. And, you know, find other legitimate reasons. So, anyway. Of course, we don't know in the future what people might do. So, again, there's that aspect of burning bridges. You don't necessarily want to burn bridges either in regards to relationships. We saw how he dealt with his uncle Laban. You know, he put him in his place. God obviously assisted him in that respect. And God will intervene. When you're trying to do the right thing, God will intervene as necessary to bring these applications about, if that's one's real desire to do so. 64, now in verse 16, to finish this off, Esau calls his troops to formation, and they, quote, return that day on his way to Seir. Shub, Bet, Hayom, Hu, Lamed, Derek, Seir. Sixty-five, the noun translated way, is Derek in the Hebrew, insinuates Esau's spiritual path in life paralleling his physical. 32:1-2, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him, and all that centers on his own spiritual demeanor as well as his physical path in life that he's on. And Jacob said when he saw them, this is God's counsel. He named that place Mahanim. So this word Derek, pathway, same sense we see it in the Greek, connote one's Christian life, as I translated, potential alternative translating, according to his way. Because you have the preposition lama before it. To his decision. It shows his decision that he's making in life. This is what you're seeing here. He's made his decision in life. Jacob's making his decision in life. And they're going their separate ways. That's what I'm trying to bring out to you. I'm having trouble doing that. I'm already on the beach. So, you know, that's the way it goes. Sixty-six, Esau's immediate departure. leaves a reader with the sense that Jacob's decision to decline his offers is really no, quote, skin off his back. Okay, fine. Pack him up, move him out. Rawhide. This truly reflects Esau's negative volition as he returns to what the world has given him in disregard for what God has for the covenant heir otherwise. And again, that's why he was able to blow off Jacob's situation some 20 years later, is because he'd become quite wealthy and powerful on his own with the cosmos. He could care less about the covenant heir, the covenant inheritance after the fact. That's why he cried to Isaac, and why he lost it so much when Jacob deceived his father in getting the blessing, is because he's going to lose all his inheritance. He could care less about God's plan. So 68, the phrase "that day" places the entirety of the events beginning chapter 32, verse 22, all the way back there, when he rose the same night and took his two wives and two maids and 11 children across the ford of the Jabbok, and ending here as one 24-hour period. Yeah, his kids ought to be wore out. I'd be wore out. All right, well, time's all but up. I'll let you go early so some of you can go hide the Easter eggs and save the rabbits their embarrassment, if you remember that joke. Otherwise, I'll see you 2 weeks from today. Keep us in your prayers. Obviously, I always keep you in my prayers. And we'll see you then. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us these things. In Jesus' name, amen.